today's reading. It's Matthew 9, verses 35 to 38. So that's page 974. Okay. The workers are few. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." Amen.
I think everybody's gone home now, so might as well stop. Reminds me of the story of the Cambridge University professor who at the beginning of the Second World War, he was teaching there, and beforehand he always used to turn up to the lecture and go, "Good morning, gentlemen," and he used to carry on. Of course, they then introduced ladies into Cambridge University, so he'd come up and he'd go, "Good morning, gentlemen." He was a bit of a traditionalist. And then the war came, and of course a lot of the men were called away to war, but he would still come up and go, "Good morning, gentlemen." And one day he arrived and there was all women and one man. So he walked in and he went, "Good morning, gentlemen," and carried on the lecture. A couple of weeks later, of course, this man had also been called up. So he wanders in and he goes, "Well, there's nobody's turned up for the lecture today. I won't give it," and walked out. So I try it again. "Good morning."
Good morning.
One of the, I do love harvest. I do love harvest. One of my, in a way, favourite times of the year. When I get this sorted out, I'll be well away. Probably that's because I had been used to living next door to two brothers who ran a farm. And interestingly, you talk to one brother, and if you met him in the morning, you'd say to him, you'd say, "What's the weather going to be like today?" And he'd look around and he'd go, "I think it'll rain before night falls." And you know, he was usually right. I thought, this is weird. Maybe it's just his year. So I said to his other brother, I said, "How come your brother is so good at predicting the weather?" And he said, "Oh, it's easy, because in the fens where we were, right on the edge, when you look around, you can see so far to the horizon. If he sees a cloud in the distance, then it might rain. If he doesn't see any clouds, then it won't rain." So it was dead easy, really. He just looked at the weather, looked at the sky. But I was fascinated by this for a while. But I love harvest, because it reminds me of that time surrounded by farms. But it also reminds me that God is faithful. We have our seasons here, and harvest produces the food. I think we often take our planet and what God did for us for granted so often. There's an advert on the television which I'm going to show you. I'm not plugging the brand that's doing it. It's just the first time I saw this, I was blown away by it, because I thought, hey, that is saying such wonderful things about God without saying them about God. You'll see what I mean in a minute. Hopefully. There is sound to it. By the way, the sound, sorry, my apologies.
Life is a miracle. Out of all the planets and all the solar systems, ours was the one to support our whole existence. Ours is abundant in sustenance, not too close or far from the sun, just enough distance. Ours are the lungs that can make use of oxygen, breathe it in and get high on life like an intoxicant. We're all interconnected. Everything that happens, all things are affected. We're born alone, but we morph into collectives, and every experience falls into perspective when you see that this planet is yours to explore. See, we leave our mark in the people we affect, the memories we make when we speak and we connect, the feelings we share, the secrets we protect, the strength and the weakness we project. Here's like a drop in the ocean, ups, downs, and a lot of emotion. But you're still here to see the morning. Life's for the taking. Breathe it all in.
As I said, I'm not advertising for O2. I'm not taking commissions from them. But actually, I didn't have a clue. When I first saw the advert, I thought, what is this advertising? Is it advertising God? I thought, no, it's O2. Well, why it got to O2, I do not know. But I should, that advert to me, you know, why should this planet in this solar system, in this universe or galaxy, in this universe, be the one where there is higher life, where there is oxygen that we breathe? Why? Because God made it. And harvest says about there. Harvest actually usually starts in our fields with this, rapeseed. Rapeseed is the very first crop that most farmers will harvest. I used to think it was mustard, but then that's gone now. It's rapeseed. Or the problem with rapeseed is it's a very small seed. So if the lorry just has a very small hole in it, there's a whole trail of rapeseed where the it's fallen out, but they don't worry. Then they go on to wheat, barley, things planted at certain times, and so that they can produce the best crops. I don't know about you, what your view, actually I heard it this week even, when we talked about harvest, somebody said, what you tend to think of as farmer, is somebody stood there with a straw out of his mouth that he's just picked out of the straw that's in his brain. But having known farmers, they're not like that. They're the ultimate DIY person. They can dig trenches, they do concreting, they do fencing, they do hedgerows. If, by the way, you now go along the country road and complain about the hedgerow, it's not the farmer's fault. They've been told from the government not to bother looking after hedgerows anymore. Don't know why, but that's what I was told by a farmer just the other week. They're also mechanics, keeping their farm vehicles going. They're also predictors of the weather. They need to do a little bit of that for harvesting especially, or the best time to plough. And they have to be strategists as well. When to plant the stuff. If you look out at a farm, you sometimes will see in the very distance, especially in the winter months, a single tractor going up and down, pulling a piece of equipment. That's the farmer just turning over the soil again and again. They do that for months. Such a lonely job. Think about that. If you were doing that all day. Imagine going up the M11 every day with no other traffic in sight. I know that could sound like a joy, doesn't it? But if you, after 3 months, you could get a bit bored just doing that trip. So remember, next time you buy a loaf of bread or you buy some vegetables here, so we have here fruit, even a meat pie, anything like that, remember what's gone into it. The farmer who has kept the animals, has grown, the arable farmer who's grown all the stuff, the market traders, market gardeners who've grown stuff as well, just to put those produce in our supermarket. One day a lady was stood in her front garden and it was one like this, gorgeous, you know, all laid out, nice, nice white flowers, all coloured flowers. And the chap walks along and says,
God, he's good to us, isn't he? Giving us all these colours, all these flowers. And the woman said, yeah, but actually 5 years ago, God had had this garden for about 10 years before that. And you should have seen the mess it was in. Because God needs us. God needs us. God needs farmers. No good just hoping a field will suddenly grow with wheat or barley or oats or whatever. The farmers have to, but then they too rely on God for the sun, for the rain, through everything like that. It's a partnership. But we do need a quality in some of these partnerships that Jesus had. In the reading, verse 35 says, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Jesus had compassion on the crowd that was following him, because they were harassed, helpless, like lost sheep. In my time as a Christian, as a minister, really, I've been embarrassed on two big occasions, especially as a minister. First embarrassment went like this. During my first sabbatical in the year 2000, I went to a group therapy course. Not that I needed the therapy, it was that I was learning about group therapy, before you all jumped to conclusions. And it was a course, so it was split in the evening. And it was split. The first bit of the evening was learning about different types of group therapy that had happened. And in it, we were joined by other people at one time. And I think I had said, no, that's not true. And the person said, oh, you're in denial. I went, pardon? He went, we'll get there eventually. Don't even know I am lying to myself. Apparently that's what denial means. And I thought, that's all very good. But it's a bit like the time when I was at Bible College, Sue, when the girls were in Nottingham, I was down in London, and I felt a bit unwell one day, and I went to the nurse and said, I'm not feeling too good. And she says, are you missing your wife? And I thought, and I went, actually, which either way I answer that question, it doesn't look good. Because if I say yes, you'll go, well, that's why you feel ill. But if I say no, then you'll think I'm a cold, heartless person. So, yeah, it's a bit like, when did you stop beating your wife type of question. You know, that has used to come. But don't even know I'm lying. That means as soon as I contradict something, oh, you're in denial. But fortunately, he wasn't one of the experts who said that. So I didn't. So the second half was even more exciting at times. We used to sit in a circle. We had slightly more comfortable chairs than that, but I couldn't find a picture of it. And I remember the first evening there was a facilitator, but he didn't have an agenda. We never had an agenda. We didn't have a subject to talk about. We just sat there until somebody spoke. Well, what used to happen was, this was late afternoon, early evening, then I was rushing back to church to do, we were going through the Ten Commandments in the evenings, and I was there to do the chat first before we broke into groups. So we sat there, 10 minutes, I was sort of going through what I was going to say. 20 minutes, I was still going through what I was going to say. Half an hour, and somebody broke the silence. And we all sort of piled in. After about 3 weeks, we just used to start straight away and not worry about anything. But why I was embarrassed, it was in one of these groups. Because a lady there had relayed a story of how she had been hurt by her church that she was attending. And the other peculiar thing, we weren't all Christians. I think I was the only minister. Quite a few of the others were in social care. So as soon as this woman started pouring out her heart, they all sort of in a way, they leant forward a bit and put on that head to one side, listening face. As if you've been under social work, you'll know what I mean. They tend to do that. And I said, I am so sorry. I started apologising for the church, even though it wasn't in my church, and I never did anything, but I just thought that's so sad. I was so embarrassed for this woman and for the church. That was the first time. The other time I was embarrassed or read about a church, you know, that when people do pull down the name of a church, or as I've said before, they say, we don't want those people because they won't increase our social standing. We want these sorts of people. They'll improve our social standing in the community. And I get embarrassed hearing about stories about one church, wasn't in this country, but in one country where they set up a church, big church, set up a smaller church in a different, slightly different area, not far away. Why? So the people in that area didn't come to church with them. To me, that embarrasses me, that Christians can think in that way. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Sadly, as a church, nationally or worldwide, we have not always shown compassion. We've not had compassion. We can show compassion in different ways. Compassion is seen in different times. Today we've shown it by the Operation Agri offering, and money is sometimes there. Later in the year we'll be doing Operation Christmas Child here. Another way of showing compassion, nearer to Christmas, Spurgeon's Childcare. Right, it's not front line, but it helps others to show the compassion of the church, to show God in his faithfulness to others. But Jesus, besides showing compassion, had been doing actually something about it. It wasn't just a feeling. He went, oh dear, these people. Because beforehand, we read, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. He'd been teaching, he'd been preaching, he'd been healing. There was practicality in his help. At some times, with people in certain situations, they are more concerned about where the next meal is coming from, or where their next sleeping place is going to be, than about whether they're going to get to heaven or not. You know, in the movies, usually in the frontier Wild West, you see what they call the doss house, where the homeless go. They get a meal and they get a bed for the night. But actually, before they get the meal and before they get the bed for the night, they have to sit through an hour-long service of worship. And they do that, probably with very little effect on them, it seemed, in the movies, because they got a hot meal, because they got somewhere to sleep. So it's good at times that we help out at that lower level of our needs. Jesus healed people. Yes, he did preach and he did teach, but he also healed people. Or take the incident of this from the life of Jesus. Now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus travelled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. And as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. when he saw them. He said, go show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw that he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at the Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Remember, the enemies of the Jews. Jesus asked, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner? Then he said to him, rise, go. Your faith has made you well. What we don't hear is, Jesus took back the healing from the other 9. They still went away healed, even though they hadn't recognized the healer. And there will be homeless people who will be getting soup runs from churches. And other people will be being helped. Operation Agri, helping farmers through the local church. But there will be some who will realize that it's the love of Christ. For others, it will just be for them. A handout. How is your compassion indicator? You know, why do you do things? For yourselves or for others? This week I was made to think about this place, Willow Creek Community Church. They were very big in the Christian circles in the 90s, late 90s, early noughties. They're in Chicago. And their services on Sunday weren't for Christians. They were for non-Christians. What they would do in their service, they would have about half a dozen over 6 Sundays where they would do a topic. They would look at something like parenting or sexuality or, you know, topics like that. They would have minimal of singing and they would do these topics and they would show how the Bible speaks into them. And then after about 6 or 8 weeks, they would say, you've heard of all about this and you've seen how the Bible speaks into these things and what it has to say in such an up-to-date subject. Then what the Bible says about Jesus Christ and his death and resurrection and the invitation to you comes from the same book. So if one lot was true, then that lot will be true. And that was how they worked their Sundays. If you wanted a Christian service, you went on a Thursday, not on the Sunday. They did direct. They had a target audience. They were the 20s and 30s middle class people who lived in Chicago at that time. I went onto their website this week. Their Sundays look as if they're a bit more sort of normal services, I must admit. But they still run quite a large social welfare program alongside as well a relational welfare program. Doing marriage and parenting and others. So they still have that compassion. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in the synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, healing every disease and sickness. And when he saw the crowds, he had compassion. Compassion is useless without action. So Jesus went on to say to his disciples, he went on to say, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send our workers into his harvest. Harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. What are we to do about that? Firstly, Jesus says, to pray that God will send us more workers. In a church setting, what's the worst attended meeting in church? The prayer meeting. Even the largest church in the world that had 1 million members in it, when they held a prayer meeting, yes, there were 100,000 there, but if you work it out, it's still only 10%. Which isn't a huge number. Put on food and you get nearly 100% there. So the prayer meeting is the worst attended meeting. There's one here every Friday, but you can tell the size of it. They all meet in my office. I'm never sure what it is that turns people off prayer meetings. I just don't know. For a few years we had, if you remember, the National Day of Prayer. We all met in football stadia. Instead of Millwall being known for violence, it was there that we had that day of prayer. But it was prayer, but we seemed to spend an inordinate amount of time listening to people speak from the platform and singing worship. But I'm sure we spent less percent praying. Even though there were so many there. Prayer should be a central part of our lives, both corporately and individually. And if we can make certain meetings, what about a prayer meeting? Because that's where compassion can start. As we talk with God, and therefore God lays things on our hearts. So does that mean when I've prayed, job done? Because Jesus said the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest fields. I pray, you work. Sounds like a good deal to me. But if you then read on the book of Matthew into the next chapter, it says Jesus called his 12 disciples to him, gave them authority to drive out spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. Jump into verse 5 if you're following it. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions. Don't go among the Gentiles or enter my town of the Samaritan, any town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. As you go, preach this message. The message of heaven is near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. Do not take along any gold or silver or copper in your belts. Take no bag for the journey or extra tunic or sandals or staff, for the workers is worth his keep. They're told to pray for workers. Then he sends them out to work. God is the Lord of the harvest, and we are in partnership with him. The new workers, yes, are those that come from our prayers, but also through our practical help, our spiritual help. Maybe as we're praying for workers, we get that surge of compassion in our hearts, because that's where it all begins. The harvest begins with the compassion we have for people who are harassed, who are helpless, who are lost like sheep without a shepherd. Let's pray. Maybe somebody that you are can call to mind. Somebody who doesn't know the Lord, doesn't follow Christ, but who's been on your heart. Bring them to God now. You may have been praying for them for years. I know some people who do. But that still is no reason to stop. You may have that special friend who you're aching for them to become a Christian. But they don't, there's no reason to drop them. But keep praying for them. So bring, you may have more than one, bring them to the Lord now and ask Him through His Spirit to change their heart.